March of 1981, a small movie was released in England by the name of Chariots of Fire. 1 year later, in the greatest Oscar upset up to that moment, it was awarded Best Picture, defeating the far-out favorite, Robert Redford's Reds, as well as a cinematic classic known by the name Raiders of the Lost Ark. To watch on YouTube the moment of its victory, to see the Oscars of 1982, is to be suddenly transported to another era, where a movie about a religious runner could win. Today, in the age of the Great Awakening, it's impossible to imagine the Oscars honoring a film that is really first and foremost a celebration of religious faith and religious liberty. Indeed, one doubts that a film like Chariots of Fire would even get nominated. Yet it is safe to say that for many, this film today has not lost its appeal. Chariots of Fire, as many of you know, depicts two British runners that competed in the 1924 Paris Olympics almost exactly 100 years ago today. A Jew by the name of Harold Abrams and a devout Christian named Eric Little. Abrams is a member of elite society. His father is wealthy. He goes to Caius College, Cambridge. But he is heartsick at the subtle anti-Semitism he experiences. And he runs as an expression of his inner anger. Or as he puts it, he'll take them on one by one and run them off their feet. Eric Little, in contrast, is a missionary who spent time in China and has returned to his native Scotland, competing in adherence to the advice of his father, who was himself a missionary, who told him, and I'm going to do some Scottish accents here in this film, in this discussion, and he says to him, run in God's name and let the world stand back and wonder. I know, it's amazing, amazing Scottish accents. Both runners are meant to compete in the Olympics in the 100-meter dash, seeking to become the fastest man on earth. But the qualifying heat for the 100 meters is set on Sunday, the Christian Sabbath, and Little refuses to run and competes instead, not against Abrams, but in the 400 meters some days later. I am, I confess, obsessed with this film. I have read what I can about its historical background, and I even took pains to attend a staged 2012 version of Chariots of Fire in a London theater. There are moments for all of us when we learn of the passing of an actor later in life, who for us in our own youth embodied the archetype of vigor, physicality, athleticism. For me, that moment came several summers ago when I read of the passing of Ben Cross, not the biggest movie star in the world, but the one who played Harold Abrams and therefore the ultimate movie star for me. Cross did a wonderful job as Abrams. The truth is that while one may have expected a rabbi such as myself to identify with his character, the Jewish athlete in the film, in fact, it is Little, the Christian runner, whom I often cite in my sermons. Abrams sees his Jewishness in the movie as nothing but a social handicap. He runs, really, to gain acceptance, to excel. When Abrams explains to the woman that he ultimately will marry that he considers his running a weapon against, quote-unquote, being Jewish, she laughs and she says, "You're not serious." And he gloomily replies, "You're not Jewish, or you wouldn't ask." Abrams wins gold in the film in the 100-meter dash. And Chariots of Fire is bookended by the memorial service celebrating Abrams' life. But from a Jewish perspective, all he sought is assimilation, and therefore his life is, at least from my own perspective, somewhat of a tragic one. Eric Little, in contrast, is devout. His faith motivates his athletics. My sermons often cite Little's father, who tells his son in the film as well that you're the proud possessor of many talents, and it's your sacred duty to put them to good use. The point, in other words, is that for people of faith, the world at large and our skills with which we have been gifted by God are not to be rejected, but channeled, directed, sanctified. Thus, in my own talk today, as we prepare for the 100th anniversary of the 1924 Paris Olympics, Olympics that are taking place then as now in Paris. I'll explain the pain that I experience when I ponder Abrams' story in the film, and then turn to why I continue to learn from and continue to be inspired by the movie's portrayal of Eric Little, how his character teaches us about the nature of faith, what it means to be a person of faith in the world, and, strikingly, what it means to be a Jew. Let's start with Harold Abrams. The more I watch the movie, and I've seen it probably parts of it 50 times, the more I study the movie, the more I love the movie, the more I've also come to understand the terrible Jewish irony that lies at its heart. For Abrams, as we've said, what is important is acceptance and assimilation. One of the central scenes of the arc of Abrams' story shows him at Cambridge participating in one of the elite pursuits at the college, which is the Gilbert and Sullivan Club. And the song he is singing, the song he is performing is, "He is an Englishman. In spite of all temptations to belong to other nations, he remains an Englishman. He remains an Englishman." When he's confronted at Cambridge by anti-Semitic college dons who accuse him of being interested only in his own glory, Abrams says nothing about his ancient heritage, does not respond to the anti-Semitism, does not respond to the sneering with Jewish pride. In fact, he makes no mention of his Jewishness. Instead, all he says is, "I am a Cambridge man first and last. I am an Englishman first and last. What I have achieved and what I intend to achieve is for my family, for my university, and for my country." I can't quote him in the accent because I can't do an English accent very well, not like my Scottish accent, which, audience, I'm sure you all agree, is amazing. Now, all this accords with who Abrams originally was. In an interesting doctoral dissertation, which is titled "Jews and British Sport" by David Garrett Dee, and yes, as part of my obsessive research about Chariots of Fire, I read a doctoral dissertation titled "Jews and British Sport." The author notes that, quote, "Abrams claimed the most important factor in Jewish sporting success was a willingness to anglicize and to move away from one's religion," end quote. Dee, the author of this dissertation, further notes that in the 1920s, the precise moment when the film is set, Abrams wrote an article in an Anglo-Jewish publication encouraging English Jews to compete on the Sabbath, on the Jewish Sabbath, because if they didn't, they could never truly compete and they could never truly assimilate. It's hard not to note this contrast between Eric Little, who famously refused to run on the Christian Sabbath, and Abrams, who not only himself competed, but who actually wrote an article in a Jewish publication urging Jews to run on the Sabbath. But even more interesting is the argument that Abrams put forward in the piece for why Jews should run on the Sabbath. This is what he wrote, quote, "One must make it clear that a strict adherence to Judaism would prevent one from participating in Saturday competitions, and as a result, the strict Jews could never hope to attain international recognition, since at a conservative estimate, 90% of important competitions are held on a Saturday afternoon. A religion qua such," he continued, "that is one's philosophy of life or theistic view, has little, if anything, to do with the qualities which characterize an athlete," end quote. In other words, he's saying religion is not linked to athletic excellence in any way. And the terrible irony of this, of course, is that for Eric Little, as we will see, not only is his faith central to him, but his faith is central to who he is, not just as a Christian, but as an athlete. In the end, the story of Harold Abrams is a perfect and painful portrait of a comment by a late British chief rabbi, Jonathan Sacks, who wrote that, quote, "Nothing could be more striking than the fact that a people whose very reason for being in the past was to be different, chosen, particular, should today define itself in purely universalist terms, forgetting, surely not accidentally, that it is precisely in our particularity that we enter and express the universal human condition," end quote. Not only does Harold Abrams not embrace this notion, Harold Abrams, if I may pun, runs away from his Jewish identity. For Eric Little, in contrast, faith has everything to do with his qualities as an athlete. In one of the central scenes in his story arc, he is speaking to his sister, Jenny. Jenny sees his running as a waste of time, is worried that Eric is not focusing enough on their religious missionizing, that he's not focusing on their return to China. And he responds as follows, and again, be prepared for my amazing Scottish accents. And he says as follows, Jenny, I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. And thus it is that in the film, and this is slightly historically inaccurate because in real life he had announced long before the Olympics that he would not compete in the heat to qualify for the 100 meters. But in the film, all that unfolds during the Olympics, where a group of British aristocrats, including the Prince of Wales, the future King Edward, who would abdicate over Wallace Simpson, are pressuring him to run, to compete in the heat on the Sabbath. And he resolutely sticks to his guns, resolutely sticks to his principles, resolutely obeys his faith, his beliefs. Let's watch this scene.
All that being understood, we decided to invite you in for a little chat to see if there's any way that we can help resolve the situation.
There's only one way to resolve the situation. That's for this man to change his mind and run.
Don't state the obvious, Cadogan. We have to explore ways in which we can help this young man to reach that decision.
I'm afraid there are no ways, sir. I won't run on the Sabbath, and that's final. I intended to confirm this with Lord Birkenhead tonight, even before you called me up in front of this inquisition of yours.
Don't be impertinent, Little.
The impertinence lies, sir, with those who seek to influence a man to deny his beliefs.
On the contrary, Little, we're appealing to your beliefs in your country, in your king, your loyalty to them.
Hear, hear. In my day, it was king first, God after.
Yes, and the war to end wars bitterly proved your point.
God made countries. God makes kings and the rules by which they govern. And those rules say that the Sabbath is his. And I, for one, intend to keep it that way.
Mr. Little, you're a child of your race, as I am. We share a common heritage, a common bond, a common loyalty. There are times when we're asked to make sacrifices in the name of that loyalty. Without them, our allegiance is worthless. As I see it, for you, this is such a time.
Sir, God knows I love my country, but I can't make that sacrifice.
Only after he resolutely refuses to put king over God does the suggestion finally come to the surface that perhaps he could compete in a different race, in the 400 meters rather than the 100 meters. And then there's a wonderful scene where the question is, can he do that at such late notice? And one of the aristocrats says, that's a matter for the committee. And one of the other aristocrats says, we are the committee. And then he chooses to run in the 400 meters instead. And as they disband, one of these aristocrats says to the other, that Eric Little, quote, is a true man of principle and a true athlete. His speed is a mere extension of his life, its force. We sought to sever his running from his self. We sought to sever his running from his self. In other words, faith and running are not, as per Harold Abrams, totally separate from one another. They are bound up with one another. So for a rabbi to watch Chariots, to watch the tale of Little and Abrams, is to wish the roles were reversed, because Eric Little teaches us a great deal about faith. And it's with this in mind that we as Jews can seek to learn from Eric Little. In another splendid scene, Little, on the Sunday in which he was meant to compete, is instead depicted speaking from a pulpit. And he has chosen a reading, or as he says, my reading is from the book of Isaiah. Let's watch this scene. And note well the verses that he chooses.
My text this afternoon is taken from Isaiah, chapter 40. Behold, the nations are as a drop in the bucket and are counted as the small dust in the balance. All nations before him are as nothing. They are counted to him less than nothing. Vanity. He bringeth the princes to nothing. He maketh the judges of the earth as a vanity. Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary?
Juvenile!
I know, Sam.
He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no strength, he increaseth might. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And they shall walk and not faint.
Book of Isaiah. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. We can understand why the film chose this verse. If you were looking for a scriptural allusion to the theme of a film about Olympic runners, you would of course choose this passage in Isaiah. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. But here, ladies and gentlemen, is what the makers of the film could not have known. That this passage, that second part, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles, they shall run and not be weary. We read this as the Haftarah, the prophetic passage, for Lech Lecha, the first parasha, the first weekly portion in which we describe the journey of Abraham beginning. Why is this so? If you were reading the Bible looking for verses to pair with Abraham's story, why would you select this verse? The truth is, I think, the more I thought about it, that I realized that Chariots of Fire itself provides us an answer. And so we turn to another stirring scene. Here, Eric Little, after winning a race in Scotland, addresses his fans in the rain. And he informs them that they, not him, are the true emotional athletes. True examples of perseverance in the way they live their lives. Because, he says to them, life is the greatest race of all. And he gives a sort of sermon here in the rain. Stunning. Let's watch it together.
You came to see a race today. See someone win. Happened to be me. But I want you to do more than just watch a race. I want you to take part in it. I want to compare faith to running in a race. It's hard. It requires concentration of will, energy of soul. You experience elation when the winner breaks the tape, especially if you've got a bet on it. But how long does that last? You go home. Maybe your dinner's burnt. Maybe you haven't got a job. So who am I to say believe, have faith in the face of life's realities? I would like to give you something more permanent, but I can only point the way. I have no formula for winning the race. Everyone runs in her own way, or his own way.
Then where does the power come from to see the race to its end? From within.
Where does the power come from to see the race to its end? From within. Eric Little then goes on in the scene to deliver a Christian message. But what I have just quoted, what we have just seen, this is a notion to which all people of faith can ascribe. The power to see the race to its end comes from within. Or to cite the verse in Isaiah, those that wait upon the Lord find the capacity to renew our spiritual strength, to mount up with wings of eagles. This is what allows us to persevere. Eric Little is utilizing his running as a metaphor for faith in the face of life's difficulties, as a metaphor for faith itself. In this respect, there is a bit of an irony, rightly understood, to the title of the film. Chariots of Fire is a phrase from William Blake's poem, now a song called Jerusalem, one of the most famous in England. It's sung at the beginning and closing of the movie. In this bit of verse, the poet describes his aspiration to remake the Holy Land in England. The poem begins with a Christian legend, and then it turns to biblical allusion. And in the song, it goes like this. Bring me my bow of burning gold. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear, O clouds unfold. Bring me my chariots of fire. Not bad. Chariots of Fire is the ethereal vehicle that escorted Elijah, the prophet, up to heaven. And it's compared here in the film to the speed made manifest by the runners. But the irony in the title is twofold. First, the poem Jerusalem is sung in the film, but the scene in which it is sung is a symbol of Abram's utter assimilation. Abram's funeral, at which Jerusalem is sung, takes place in a Catholic church. If you look at the end of the film, which we'll show you now, Jerusalem is sung. So you have a song named Jerusalem for the funeral of a Jewish runner in a Catholic church, ending, as you'll see, with the symbol of England that is there in the church, as well as his colleague speaking about how he achieved his ultimate accomplishment, which was not to live as a Jew, but rather to run everyone else off their feet. Let's watch that. Thus, as an act of filmmaking, it is beautiful, ethereal. But for a Jew watching the funeral of this Jewish runner and hearing Jerusalem in this context, it is painful and profoundly ironic. The second irony to the term chariots of fire is the following. Elijah's chariot is a symbol of his own prophetic career, the massive miracles that he performed, and most famously, the fire that he brought forth from above in order to defeat the prophets of Baal. But Elijah himself journeys to heaven in his chariot because God makes clear to him that his time on earth is ended because another approach is needed. For all the wonders of Elijah's extraordinary acts, the people of Israel had not turned to God. They had not hearkened to his miracles. And thus, in one of the Bible's most famous and sublime scenes, God causes a terrifying fire to pass before Elijah as he stood on Sinai, but God was not in the fire. And then finally, as we discussed in our Field of Dreams discussion, the Almighty appears to Elijah within a still, small voice. The point, of course, is that miracles, however wondrous, are external to us. They inspired Israel for a moment, but made no permanent impact. Faith must come first and foremost from within, from the small voice of God to be discovered within ourselves. Elijah sought instantaneous change. He thought he had achieved that when the Israelites saw the fire at Mount Carmel, fire descending from heaven. And they all exclaimed, "The Lord is God," but it does not last. And God informs Elijah that faith does not descend in a moment, like a chariot of fire. It is a long, sustaining process. The role of the prophet is to help the Israelite find God in their own setting, in their own lives. Or to put it slightly differently, faith, as Little put it, is a race, it's a marathon. And each one runs on his or her own. And where, as Little said, does the power come from to see the race to its end? From within. That, I think, is ultimately why we read this verse from Isaiah that Little quotes in the film as a pairing with the story of Abraham's journey. They that hope in the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall walk and not be weary. They shall run and not faint. Because while Abraham's journey is not a 100-meter dash, it is about a journey. It is about a race through history, about the journey of Abraham, our forefather, who begins his journey to the promised land. And it is also about our own Jewish journey of faith through history, through very difficult times, persevering through many different ages with very few external miracles, with no chariots of fire from heaven to transport us or to protect us. This journey of Abraham continued for millennia, and our ancestors ran or walked but did not faint. Where did they find their power to see this race to its end? It came from within. I've noticed that by coincidence or providence, this passage, the Haftorah of Lech Lecha, is almost always read on the Shabbat before the New York Marathon. They shall run and not be weary. They shall run and not faint. The marathon of Jewish history involved runners that found their faith within, ensuring that we are now Jews today. Thus, the message of Eric Little, that life itself is a race and that the power to see the race to its end comes from within, that is the ultimate Jewish message. One of my favorite athletic stories involves an Israeli woman by the name of Moran Samuel, who was a rower for the female Israeli Paralympic rowing team. And she was competing in one match, and she won. This was a match in Italy. And for some reason, they did not have Hatikva prepared. Perhaps it was not expected that she would win. A different song played instead. And Moran Samuel, in typical Israeli fashion, stops the music, takes the mic, and sings Hatikva. The metaphor is sublime. Hatikva, the hope, comes from within. Hatikva, the song, had been lost. They didn't have it prepared. And she takes the mic and sings, "Od lo avda tikvatenu." Our hope is not actually lost, because the hope, her song, comes from within. And in truth, Moran Samuel herself might easily have been a woman who could have lost all hope. She was a gifted basketball player until the age of 24, and she was suddenly paralyzed from the waist down by a stroke. And then, as she told Israeli TV at when that happened, many people expected her to be overcome by depression, but she said, "I wasn't someone like that before I was injured, and I'm not going to be someone who gives way to depression after I was injured." And then she added the following, "My optimism, which is encoded in my genes," that, she said, is what helped her push forward to her rehabilitation. The point, in other words, is that to be a Jew is to find the strength to persevere. And where does the power come from to see the race to its end? The power comes from within. To me, this was extraordinary. First of all, because I'd always wanted to find a story about Jews and rowing. You don't really encounter a lot of Jews that excel in rowing, though I did after this find others. Indeed, I grew up in Yeshiva University, learning of one of the best jokes ever, in which Yeshiva University starts a crew team, a rowing team, and they keep losing. So they decide to send a spy to the Charles River to spy on the Harvard rowing team to see what they're doing wrong. And famously, as the joke goes, one of the members of their team comes back and says, Chevra, I spied on the Harvard rowing team and I figured out what we're doing wrong. He said, on the Harvard rowing team, he said, they have 8 people rowing and only 1 person yelling. And that is why the Yeshiva University rowing team did not. And that is why the Yeshiva University rowing team did not succeed. But here we have the ultimate example of a woman who encounters tragedy, who encounters difficulty, and perseveres. And where does she find the power to see that race to its end? From within. That ultimately is the theme of HaTikvah. That ultimately is the meaning of Od Lo Avda Tikvateinu. That ultimately is the message that Jews can draw, not from Harold Abrams, but from Eric Little, or to put it slightly differently, and painfully, and ironically. The character that teaches us the most about the prophetic passage linked to the reading of the story of Abraham is Eric Little, not the runner named Abrams. In 2012, when England was hosting the Olympics and the Paralympics, I visited London and I was given a personal tour of the House of Lords by one of its Jewish members. I mentioned to this Lord that Chariots of Fire was one of my favorite films. And he said to me, well, you know, the producer of Chariots of Fire, David Putnam, is also a member of the House of Lords. He's a friend of mine. And so I'll put you in touch. So he takes out his cell phone, he hits a number, and he says something like, I'll never forget this, I think we were in the House of Lords parking lot. And he says something like, David, I have a rabbi here from America who can quote every line from Chariots of Fire. He's going to be in touch with you. And so he gives me David Putnam's email. So now I'm thinking, what do I ask the producer of my favorite film? Now, to a rabbi such as myself, the answer was obvious. I have so much to ask, but I found myself there in the summer right before the high holidays, and I need stuff for my high holiday sermon. That takes precedence above all else. And I realized that one of my favorite scenes is the scene where Eric Little cites that passage from Isaiah. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength, they shall rise with wings as eagles. And so I email him and I wrote, Lord Putnam, I am the rabbi that Lord, and I gave the name, mentioned would be in touch. Let me begin by thanking you for Chariots of Fire, which is my favorite film and means such a great deal to me. There is so much I'd love to ask you. And then I added, but for now, I wish to focus on one point. In my Rosh Hashanah New Year sermon that I'll be delivering this Monday, I will be mentioning Eric Little's comparing life to a race. Later, in what is for me one of the most religiously meaningful moments in the film, he cites from Hebrew scripture, mentioning Isaiah's statement that those who hope in the Lord or wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. What inspired the focus on the film upon this passage? This is a small passage, a small section of my email, with slight paraphrasing. And then I added, separately, I was in London last week and was greatly impressed by the celebration of the athletes competing in the Paralympics. They, perhaps more than any other, exemplify the notion of finding the power within to continue the race that is life. I was hoping for your thoughts on this as well. I know you must get emails such as this all the time, though I am not sure if you've received one of this kind from a rabbi before. As we celebrate the Jewish New Year, I wish you a year to come of continued blessing and success. That's what I wrote to him, and he responded, Dear Rabbi Soloveitchik, many thanks for your wonderfully welcome email. To quickly answer your questions ahead of Monday's sermon, the passage which you refer to as being your favorite, it's also mine. And then he gives it along with one other scene, meaning one of his favorite scenes is the Isaiah scene. And then he wrote as follows. The passage, because I asked him, how did you choose this passage? How did you find this verse in Isaiah? And he wrote, the passage was in fact specifically selected by the actor, the late Ian Charlson, who gave himself the task of reading the entire Bible whilst preparing for the film. As to more recent events, he continued, I felt exactly as you did in respect of the Paralympics. I was until recently deputy chairman of Channel 4 and was part of the team that outbid the BBC for the rights. In my 6 years with the channel, I was never more proud of being a part of something. I think that among a great number of people, we may have altered perceptions of disability forever. That's about it for now. And then he concluded, I'm off to Jerusalem toward the end of next month to teach the meaning of film for 5 days at the Sam Spiegel Film School. All the luck in the world on Monday, meaning on Rosh Hashanah. As we say in show business, break a leg. Warmest personal regards, David Putnam. So it's remarkable, ladies and gentlemen. Through all of Hebrew scripture, of all the possible passages that could have been chosen to illustrate the notion of triumph over adversity, of hope after defeat, of the power within to continue the race that is life, this actor chose a chapter, Isaiah 40, that is read by Jews on 2 Shabbatot of the year, The first part, He maketh the kings as nothing, is read on Shabbat Nachamu, the Shabbat after Tisha B'Av, when we rise from our mourning and embrace hope. And the final and most famous phrase, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength, that is read as a pairing with the story of Abraham and his journey to the promised land. Moran Samuel told an interviewer, reflecting on her life and on her singing of Hatikvah, the following. If you look at an obstacle as an obstacle, there's a good chance it will knock you down. If you look at an obstacle as a challenge, then you'll do the maximum to overcome it. There can be, she said, small challenges, like the missing anthem and me taking the mic and singing. And there can be bigger challenges. End quote. And if someone with her experience can say that, then so must we. We all face moments in our lives that are all too easily depicted as obstacles to religious and moral growth. It's easy to give in to despair, but that is not the Jewish way. The power to see the race to its end comes from within. At the end of the movie Chariots of Fire, in a scene that has some adaptation but is essentially true, when Little is about to begin the 400-meter race, he's handed a paper surreptitiously by a member of the American running team. And this, like all of the other clips we're showing, is just from a part of the film that somebody put online because this film is beloved. Let's look at what he was handed and the verse that was cited.
It says in the old book, he that honors me, I will honor. Good luck, Jackson Shores. So where does the power come from? To see the race to its end from within. I believe God made me for a purpose. But He also made me fast. And when I run, I feel His pleasure.
It is probably my most favorite scene in the history of cinema. First, Eric Little is handed a note that reads, it says in the old book, he that honors me, I will honor. The old book, of course, quote unquote old book, is the Hebrew Bible. And the verse is from the book of Samuel. He that honors me, I will honor. And then he takes off, not in the race that he was supposed to run. He has lost the chance to become the fastest man on earth. He will not compete against Abrams in the 100-meter dash. But he will run in God's name. And then you hear him say the critical line, Jenny, I believe God made me for a purpose, but He also made me fast. And when I run, I feel His pleasure. And then the music. Na, 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 na. Na 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 na. I love it. And as he runs and the music starts, and you may have noticed this on the screen, we're shown a flash of Harold Abrams' face. Harold Abrams, who has won the gold in the 100-meter dash, Harold Abrams, who is the fastest man on earth. But on his face we see some sort of regret, a knowledge that he cannot experience the faithful joy of sanctified athleticism. that Eric Little has made manifest. He has run everyone off their feet, but it is ultimately Eric Little that is the true hero of the film. And for religious Jews, such as myself, and indeed for all men and women of faith, the character in the movie is a role model for all of us, more so now than in 1924, for we live in a dramatically more secular age, when much of what we believe as men and women of faith is not taken that seriously by a great part of society. To this we must respond by still holding fast to the faith of our fathers, by finding the courage within to see the race to its end. We must respond not by rejecting the world, but by bringing our faith to the world, by remembering, in the words of the Book of Samuel, "Mechabdai achabed," those that honor me, I will honor. Because the advice given by Eric Little's father to his son in Chariots of Fire is as relevant to people of faith now as in 1924. Run in God's name and let the world stand back and wonder. Thank you very much.